I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. This week we continue on our series on back pain, and I am happy to have three interesting guests. My first guest is Dr. Mark Brown, an MD and PhD, who is professor and chairman emeritus of the Department of Orthopedic and Rehabilitation at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine in Florida. Mark has over 40 years' experience caring for patients with back and neck pain, and his PhD thesis and all of his research has been devoted to the cause, prevention, and cure of spinal disorders. He is a founding member of the International Society for the Study of Lumbar Spine, and is also a member of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgery, American Orthopedic Association, Association of Bone and Joint Surgeons, the Cervical Spine Research Society, the Medical Advisory Board of Pinnacle Care, and the North American Spine Society. He serves as a consultant reviewer for the Journal of Bone and Joint Surgery, is on the board of associate editors of Clinical Orthopedics and Related Research, is on the Associate Editorial Board of Spine, and the Editorial Board of the Journal of Spinal Disorders and Techniques. He is the author of Conquer Back and Neck Pain, Walk It Off, that was a finalist in the National Bestseller Awards in the Health, Exercise, and Fitness category, and also received the 2008 American Journal of Nursing Book of the Year Award for first place in the Consumer Health category. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Mark, and I look forward to hearing your recommendations on dealing with back and neck pain. First, how common is back and neck pain in the United States?
Carl, if you think about it, almost everybody you know has suffered from back pain.
Right.
I give a lecture to the University of Miami physical therapy students every year, the senior class, and I ask them to raise their hand, those who have suffered from back pain, and I'm astounded that more than 50% of the class of young people have had back pain. It's almost of epidemic proportions in the United States.
And what are some of the more common misperceptions about treatment of back pain?
Well, the big common misconceptions are things like bed rest and painkillers, and traction for that matter, help the healing process. And just the opposite's really true. Most of these methods have been shown to prolong the agony.
And does our sedentary lifestyle contribute to these problems?
There's no question about it. We've been programmed to walk around and all day long and be on our feet. And it's only in the past 100 years that we've been able to enjoy or suffer from a lifestyle where we can sit all day and not get any exercise. And this has really caused the epidemic that we have in back pain. It's not just in the U.S., but throughout the world.
I think I learned a little bit on my own that you need to be up moving, because I injured my back, I think it was 4 years ago, and I naturally went to bed. I thought, well, I'm just going to stay in bed. It hurts too much to get up and move around. And so I stayed in bed, but I also was going for physical therapy, and I was doing the exercises, then going back to bed. And I really wasn't getting much better. And when she finished with physical therapy, she said, well, I've done all I can do. And I said, but I still have pain. And she said, well, that's arthritis. She said, you've gotten older. You just have arthritis. I said, but I didn't have it 6 months ago. I don't expect to have it now. And so I ended up going to a chiropractor, and I got rid of the pain. But I also was up moving more, because I realized that as I got up and moved around, I had less pain. And so I got up and I moved around a lot more. And now I have no pain. So sometimes we have to learn the hard way. Right.
Yes, indeed.
Then could you please offer some guidelines on when we should seek medical help for neck and back pain and when we should just walk it off?
Well, the first attack of back pain is usually so acute and so severe that it drops you to your knees. And it's so bad that people feel compelled to call 911.
Mm-hmm.
And almost 95% of the time, the first acute attacks of neck and back pain, particularly in younger individuals, is way out of proportion. The severity of it is way out of proportion to the seriousness of the condition.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have an attack, and if you can get off your feet for a few minutes, 30 minutes or so, and then see if you can get up and walk around, and if you can walk to the bathroom, and you're not lightheaded or dizzy or feeling faint, sweaty, if the pain doesn't come in spasms and you don't feel sick, the chances are you can wait, walk it off, and then wait to see your primary care doctor when it's convenient.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have any of those symptoms where it's coming in spasms and it's difficulty to get up walking or you're having trouble passing your water,
mm-hmm.
then those may be symptoms that would require you to call 911.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what can we do in our day-to-day life so that we don't have these problems?
There's no question that a sedentary lifestyle leads to soft bones, weak discs, and weak muscles, and there's more demand on your back because of increased weight. It just makes sense that staying fit and trim is better for your back.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, they did a study on firefighters in Los Angeles where they looked at the couch potato firefighters versus the ones that were buff and fit mm-hmm. and worked out every day. And they followed these firefighters for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And over the course of that 3 years, the firefighters that worked out, stayed fit, kept normal weight, had fewer attacks of back pain, less severe attacks of back pain, mm-hmm. and they got over the back pain attacks quicker.
Mm-hmm.
And it was highly significant, the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a study that confirms that staying in shape and exercising every day
mm-hmm.
really makes a difference.
Is this a relatively recent concept that you should be up and moving with back pain?
I think it's evolved over the last 20 years with good studies. I've been taking care of patients with back pain now for 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started out, it was not uncommon to prescribe a week of bed rest for an attack of back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have several studies that show that those people that get up and walk around right away as soon as they can versus those that stay in bed for even a day or two, the people that walk around as soon as they can get better quicker.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you see people that have back pain, do you try to work with diet, which probably also stresses the body? If they're overweight?
Well, over half my patients that I see with chronic neck and back disorders
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are overweight and under-exercised.
Mm-hmm.
And many, frequently, they also smoke.
Oh.
The terrible triad for mm-hmm. chronic aches and pains, not mm-hmm. just in the back, but in the shoulders mm-hmm. and the knees and the hands and wrists. So the first thing I do is explain to them why this triad is dangerous to their health, not just their back.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them the back pain is a warning. It's a warning that you're 50 pounds overweight and your body isn't designed to carry that amount of weight around all the time. And
mm-hmm.
neither is your heart. And so I tell them, look, you're 50 pounds overweight or you're 30 pounds overweight. And what you need to do is you need to sit down with your doctor and get on a good common sense diet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to prescribe any specific, but there mm-hmm. are some very good dietary systems out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have a goal of losing weight over the next 6 months to a year
mm-hmm.
in a slow, good diet. But also you need to get into a aerobic exercise program. And I usually prescribe walking a half an hour in the morning and a half an hour at night every day.
Mm-hmm.
Don't miss a day. And, of course, if a patient smokes, I go through the whole litany of reasons why they shouldn't smoke.
Mm-hmm.
because of soft bones and early wrinkles and cancer of every organ in the body and all the bad things that occur with smoking.
I'm glad you mentioned wrinkles, because that usually it gets people's attention. And smoking is one of the major lifestyle factors that cause wrinkles, I think.
Well, smoking, an interesting study was done in Finland on identical twins, where one twin smoked for a number of years and the other twin didn't, identical twins. And they looked at the MRI scans of their spine that can detect disc degeneration or loss of the cushioning power of the discs in the back. It turns out that that's a genetic condition. It occurs in humans. And the level of disc degeneration is the same in the low back for identical twins and the same onset of time. But the twins that smoked have a higher degree of disc degeneration because they didn't have good blood supply or oxygen supply to their discs. And that, along with a number of other studies that show that cessation of smoking rehabilitates patients quickly from chronic pain.
Now, how successful are you with the patients that need to lose weight and to stop smoking? Because these are really hard practices to stop. As an ex-smoker, I know how difficult that was, and I know how difficult it is to get out and walk. But what I have found is that once I start walking, I want to do it every day. I don't want to stop because I just feel so much better when I do it. But I'm wondering, you said that their primary doctors will work with them on their diet, but how successful are they with this?
Carl, it's interesting. I've been doing this so long that I've had feedback from patients that tell me, you know, doctor, you're the first one that ever explained to me why being overweight and why not exercising and why smoking has caused my problem or contributed to it, and how to go about changing these factors and improving my quality of life. And I spend some time explaining each thing in as empathetic a way as I can. Now, I've seen patients that have some severe structural problem with their back, like a massive herniated disc or with nerve damage or a condition called spinal stenosis or constriction of the spinal canal, where obviously something should be done to help them in the form of a surgical procedure, for example. But they're 30 to 40% overweight. And some of those people are beyond the point where they can exercise, and it may be dangerous for them to wait to have surgery. But certainly I get them to stop smoking completely because of the dangers of that. But if they can't wait, and if it's impossible for them to get on a treadmill or a stationary bicycle or in a swimming pool for that matter, then sometimes we'll refer them for what we call bariatric surgery, which now can be done through an endoscope or through a scope and not even through an incision on the abdomen. But those are rare instances. And most people you can prepare ahead of time for safe intervention. And in the process, many people that you think, I think this person is going to require surgery, is the only answer for them. And many times in the course of advising them to exercise and lose weight and not smoking and or not smoking, they'll actually get better. And they'll say, look, my quality of life has improved to the point where I don't think I need this surgery now. I think I can live with it.
My sister is going through some of this. She has stenosis. She has sciatica nerve. She has piriformis, is it? Piriformis muscle?
Piriformis syndrome. That's a syndrome that really doesn't exist. It's, the pain's coming from her spinal stenosis.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, and so she went for 2 years to a chiropractor, and a year ago Christmas I said to her, well, it doesn't sound like the sciatica. I said, it sounds like trigger points. So she talked with him about that, and he worked on it, but he wasn't getting anywhere. And she switched to physical therapy and pain management, and the physician is injecting something into the trigger point. So they locate those and they inject in it, and she is getting better. So they're trying to delay surgery as long as they can. but she's only able to get up. She gets up every day and goes, but she says she can't walk more than 15 minutes without a shopping cart. If she is able to lean on the shopping cart, she's able to walk better and longer.
Well, the condition of spinal stenosis and the condition which sounds like she suffers, it's very typical that she has to lean forward on a shopping cart.
Oh.
She can walk that way but can't walk upright because that constricts the spinal canal. Is that condition in most people that I've seen, and I've seen a number of patients over the years with this
mm-hmm.
condition,
mm-hmm.
if they can't walk more than two blocks or less, usually the best treatment for them is a surgical procedure, and it's very successful in the right hands.
Oh, uh-huh. Oh, yeah, I'm sure she's not going to want to hear that. I don't think anyone wants to hear that, really, do they?
One good alternative for her is to avoid all treatments such as injections and pain medications and get on a stationary bicycle and lean forward on the bicycle and use that every day, 30 minutes in the morning and 30 minutes at night.
Mm-hmm.
Another alternative, which most people don't have access to, of course, is a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, she lives in upstate New York, so I don't know what they have up there. But I'll keep track of her, and if need be, I'll nudge her in these directions. Is there anything else then you'd like to say, Mark, before we look at your book and some of the other things that you're doing and how the listener can reach you?
Well, I've written a book, Carl, called Conquer Back and Neck Pain,
mm-hmm.
Walk It Off. And
which was an award winner.
It's won several awards,
yeah.
I'm happy to say.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to any search engine and put Conquer Back and Neck Pain,
mm-hmm.
Walk It Off, or you just put Conquer Back and Neck Pain in my name, Mark Brown,
mm-hmm.
it'll come up. And it was written based on my 35-plus years experience of taking care of patients
mm-hmm.
with these disorders. I also wrote a PhD thesis on disc degeneration and why humans get back pain and dogs get it, but cats don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that dispels the theory that it's because we walk upright, because
mm-hmm.
dogs have walk on all fours.
Mm-hmm.
And I based the book on what I learned from my patients and on evidence-based medicine, which is the way we doctors figure out how to treat people based on studies such as the one about the firefighters I talked
mm-hmm.
about
mm-hmm.
earlier.
Right.
It also was written to dispel a lot of myths about back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted something out there that the readers can go to that's legitimate, because
mm-hmm.
if you go to a search engine and you put back and neck pain, you'll come up at various times from 100,000 to 1.3 million hits, of
right.
which 95% are some commercial interest or
right.
somebody
right.
with secondary gain.
Right.
So
that's a problem with many of the health conditions like arthritis or back pain or cancer. There are so many people out there trying to make a living from these, and the advice they're offering is not legitimate. And so I talked to someone earlier today. I said, that's why I have no advertising on my website. I've had a lot of people approach me and want to be on my website, but unless there's research backing up what they've got to offer, I won't have them on there. And that also is why I have this show, and I'm pretty picky about who I have on, because I don't want to be offering people misinformation. So I think it's great that you are offering a book that provides the right information also.
I have to give you a quote. There was a fellow named Thomas Tucker who wrote a review of my book,
mm-hmm.
and he opens it up with, "No other medical ailment except perhaps cancer is more subject to misinformation and pure chicanery than back pain." I think
mm-hmm.
that's a great sentence.
Right, right, right.
And it's true.
Right. And I think cancer is the same. So I think he picked two of the really top ones. But I think that arthritis is another one, though, that there's a lot of things out there that really are not that helpful. I should say also the wellness things. There's a lot of wellness people out there that are offering misinformation. But that may not be as harmful to people as it is when they've got back pain or when they've got cancer. So do you have a website?
I do. It's www.conquerbackandneckpain.com.
Mm-hmm.
It has a lot about my book.
Mm-hmm. And can people buy the book on your website as well as the other places that you mentioned?
Yes, of course. They can buy it on my website through Sunrise River Press, a link to Sunrise River Press, mm-hmm. the publisher.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find it in all the major bookstores and, of course, on the web
mm-hmm.
and the usual sources.
If someone wanted to have a consultation with you, can they reach you through your website?
They can, and they can email me through my website. That goes through an anonymous method, so I'm not inundated with emails. And then if I can help them, I'll email them back how to get a hold of me.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good. Is there anything else you would like to say then, Mark, about back pain?
Yes, I think back pain is ubiquitous throughout the world, and it seems that people from areas of the world that don't have access to a lot of treatment seem to do better with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd like to tell all my fellow Americans in particular,
mm-hmm.
You don't have to suffer with it. Don't go to doctors with it. Get out and exercise, and you'll feel better all around, and
mm-hmm.
and miraculously your back pain will go away.
Right. And I found that in my own life too, Mark. Well, I appreciate this very much, and I thank you very much for joining me today.
Carl, it's been my pleasure. Thank you very much for interviewing me.
Mm-hmm. My second guest is Dr. Philip Cheris, who received his Ph.D. from the University of Queensland in Australia in 1993 and has been an adjunct associate professor with NAPMED Research at Southern Cross University in Australia since 2007. He has received international attention for his doctoral research that led him to propose a new paradigm for the causation of osteoarthritis. He has published his vascular concept of osteoarthritis causation and presented it at numerous international conferences and symposia. In 2001, he was a core member of the team that established the Australian Centre for Complementary Medical Education and Research that was a joint venture of the University of Queensland and Southern Cross University. Dr. Cheris became the Foundation Deputy Director of the Center. Dr. Cheris has been the principal or co-investigator of clinical trials in complementary medicine valued in excess of $5 million. He has fostered links between the complementary medical industry, academia, government, and entrepreneurial investors. Dr. Cheris reviews for a wide range of journals and organizations, including the Cancer Council of Australia. In 2007, he was appointed an interim executive officer for the newly created National Institute of Complementary Medicine with the University of Western Sydney. He is also a consultant to the complementary and alternative industry and has co-authored both national and international reviews. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Phil, and I look forward to hearing about your exciting research for osteoarthritis pain.
It's great to be with you, Carl.
Thank you. First, Phil, what is osteoarthritis? How many people are affected by it? And what does it cost the country annually to treat this?
Well, osteoarthritis is generally defined as a slowly progressing disease that involves breakdown of the cartilage, which is the smooth surface in the joints, and the underlying bone, associated with inflammation and pain. And it affects up to 45% of people over 45 years of age will have osteoarthritis in the United States if they're non-obese. There's a lifetime risk of 67% chance of having osteoarthritis if you are obese and you're over 45 years of age. And in the US alone, it costs about $60 billion a year. So it's a huge disease, a huge burden. And in every decade over 20 years of age, there are more people with osteoarthritis than with heart disease, diabetes, and hypertension combined. So it's huge.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And what is believed to cause the pain in arthritis?
Yeah, once upon a time, osteoarthritis was considered to be just a wear and tear phenomenon. So if you abused your joints or if you were overweight, etc., just the rubbing of the joints together was believed to result in the damage and the pain. These days, it's evident that the pain is associated with several things, one of them being inflammation in the joint. And the chemicals associated with inflammation cause breakdown of both the bone and the cartilage, and at the same time, they can induce the pain that we see in osteoarthritis. In addition to that, my own research has shown that in perhaps 80% of people with osteoarthritis, the root cause appears to be more compromised microcirculation. So the circulation within the joint itself is reduced. And when we investigated that, we found that what was causing that reduction in blood flow through the joint was little blood clots and little droplets of fat that lodge in the small vessels.
Mm-hmm.
And that has the effect of increasing the pressure within the joint. And we know that in normal people, the joint pressure is about 26 millimeters of mercury. And if you experience more than about 30 millimeters of mercury of pressure, you get that nagging joint pain that's typical of osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
In these people, we measure the pressure at about 46 millimeters of mercury. So the blood supply into the joint isn't affected, but the flow out from the joint, that's the venous flow out from the joint, is blocked. So it's just like pumping up a car tire. So the pain is due to inflammatory chemicals and this increase in pressure within the joint.
Mm-hmm. Now, you recently published data on a clinical trial on a new complementary medicine for the treatment of arthritis. And can you, Phil, tell us how you went about performing the study?
Sure. Look, the extract we used has a proprietary name of FlexNow, and it's produced from the seed of the African shea tree. It has very, very high anti-inflammatory activity. And what we did with this study was to look at a large number. There were 89 people in our study. 39 of them received the active FlexNow, and 50 of them received a placebo.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did was to take blood samples from these people at the beginning of the study, at the end of week 1, at the end of week 10, and at the end of week 15. So it was a 15-week study
mm-hmm.
with what we would call a randomized control trial, placebo-controlled randomized control trial. And this is the same level of evidence that the drug companies use when they're assessing their antiarthritic drugs.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very important, I believe, that complementary and alternative medicines have the same scientific scrutiny
mm-hmm.
as the standard drugs that are out there from the pharmaceutical companies.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So what we did was we were particularly interested in looking at a range of markers of osteoarthritis, and this ranged from the levels of pain that people were experiencing. We wanted to know whether the trial agent was safe, And importantly, we know that those people with the highest levels of breakdown markers for cartilage and bone are those people who have the worst prognosis. So if the marker for cartilage breakdown or bone breakdown is high, we know that in 2 or 3 years' time, these people will go on to have the worst progression of their osteoarthritis. Mm-hmm. So we were particularly interested in looking at what FlexNow could do to reduce that cartilage and bone breakdown, because if we can do that and not just lower pain levels, then we're probably dealing here with an agent that can slow or halt the disease process mm-hmm. rather than just treat symptoms, and mm-hmm. that's very, very important.
Right. Now, can you tell us about the results that you found?
Certainly. In the group most at risk, and that's the people with the highest 25% of these markers of inflammation, cartilage breakdown, and bone turnover, there was a highly significant reduction in each of those markers. So what we found was that the pain associated with the inflammation was being reduced significantly, and that was across the board, not mm-hmm. just in the people with the highest levels mm-hmm. of these markers. All people who took FlexNow had significant pain reduction. Those with the worst possible potential outcomes had the best possible results. So those with the highest breakdown levels of cartilage had the greatest reduction in that breakdown. Those with the highest levels of bone breakdown had the best reduction in that bone breakdown. And the measures of other markers was also similarly improved in mm-hmm. those most at need. Mm-hmm. So we believe that what this product is doing is reducing inflammation, reducing cartilage breakdown, reducing bone breakdown, and helping to keep the joint from progressing with its osteoarthritis.
Mm-hmm.
This is extremely important because this product was shown to be completely safe. There were no adverse effects whatsoever. And this is in contrast, as you know, with some of the Western drugs, which, mm-hmm. while they may produce good pain relief, sometimes are associated with quite severe side effects that can add up to 40% to the cost of treatment.
Mm-hmm. Of course, my friend that I mentioned that I interviewed in Italy told me that you got to realize that if the drug companies do not keep us sick, they don't make money.
Well, that may be a cynical point of view, but we do know for a fact that with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, for example, there's an extremely high incidence of peptic ulcer mm-hmm. As a side effect, and that does add up to 40% to the health cost bills here. So you start off with osteoarthritis, but you can end up longer term treating a range of other major problems associated with your treatment of the arthritis. This is why I believe that complementary and alternative medicines that are adequately scientifically researched are so valuable. Mm-hmm. And in fact, OARSI, the Osteoarthritis Research Society International, has been calling now for a number of years for scientifically validated complementary medicines because they recognize the need for safe and effective alternative treatments to standard mm-hmm. Western medicines.
Mm-hmm. Then, Phil, is it possible that the findings that you've presented may have application to diseases other than osteoarthritis?
We haven't investigated that directly yet. However, what we do know is that increasingly inflammation is being linked with almost every severe mm-hmm. disease state that's mm-hmm. out there. For example, heart disease, et cetera, et cetera. All of these things have as one of their core features inflammation, and the importance of reducing inflammation probably can't be overemphasized.
Mm-hmm.
It is, however, important to reduce the inflammation without introducing other adverse effects at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this product, FlexNow, potentially has that ability. It has been shown to be very, very strongly anti-inflammatory, not just against one of the markers, but all three of the markers that we measured. These are inflammatory markers, showed marked reduction
mm-hmm.
with FlexNow. So it has broad spectrum anti-inflammatory activity. It will reduce pain, and it's not associated with adverse effects, which is most important of all. It's
right.
safe.
Mm-hmm. Are there other things you would like to say before we look at your products and how the listeners can reach you?
Only the fact that I think the importance of this particular study is that it joins a rather small group of scientifically validated complementary and alternative medicines, and I think this is the way of the future. We have a very, very literate public out there, and they're demanding levels of evidence that are similar to those provided by the drug companies.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular study, I believe, adds that scientific credibility to the outcomes that's so desperately needed. I think we can't have enough in our armament to treat osteoarthritis, and this potentially provides yet another scientifically validated treatment.
Mm-hmm. Then, Phil, would you like to tell us about services, products, or books that you have and how the listeners can reach you?
The listeners can reach me directly on my email address, which is philcheras, philcheras, at yahoo.com.au. I have published in a number of peer-reviewed journals my research. It's been presented at international conference level on many, many occasions now. And if the listeners are interested in the FlexNow product that we clinically trialed, they can Google that, and there's a lot of information on the net directly
mm-hmm.
related to that product
mm-hmm.
and related to the clinical trial itself, so they can see all of the details there if they wish.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. I thank you very much, Phil. It's been interesting, and I know that the listeners that have osteoarthritis are going to be interested in hearing this.
It's been a pleasure speaking with you, Carl, and I hope this is a benefit to a number of our listeners. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you. My third guest is Dr. Eugene Lipov, MD, who is board certified in anesthesiology and pain management. He graduated from Northwestern Medical School in 1984 and attended Rush St. Luke's Medical Center to pursue advanced training in anesthesiology and pain management. He has been on the academic faculty at Rush St. Luke's for more than 5 years. Dr. Lipov is currently the director of research at Northwest Community Hospital and medical director of Advanced Pain Center. He has conducted numerous media interviews about his innovative treatment of hot flashes and pain management. He was an instructor for the ISSS, International Spine Injection Society, and is a member of ISSS and NASS, North America Spine Society. He will talk about neurostimulators in pain management. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Gene, and I look forward to hearing about pain management and peripheral nerve stimulator for pain management.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Now, tell me, what is new in understanding pain and its management?
Well, I believe some of the latest developments in pain is non-medicinal. In the past, for many, many years, narcotics or opioids have been the mainstay of treatment of pain.
Mm-hmm.
In the 21st century, I believe we have a much better understanding where the pain is coming from or pain generators.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the latest research using functional MRI being a device
mm-hmm.
that can demonstrate which part of the brain is active during an activity. So let's say somebody has back pain, a certain part of the brain called insular cortex lights up during that activity, and you can tell which part of the brain actually is a conduit for the pain. Based on that knowledge, what is possible now is doing electrical implants to affect that conduit, and the pain never gets beyond that area of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And the advantage there is there's no drugs being used.
Right.
So there is no addiction or any of that. And also keep in mind there is two types of pain. One is nociceptive pain or our arm pain or shoulder pain, things like that, mm-hmm. which is classically responsive to narcotics. And there is neuropathic pain, which is nerve pain. Let's say there is nerve injury, which is resistant to narcotics. So even if a patient takes a lot of narcotics, it still doesn't take the pain away,
mm-hmm.
while a stimulator can actually work on both types of pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the latest. I mm-hmm. believe we have much better understanding where the pain is coming from, and we have some new tools in treatment of that.
Mm-hmm. Is there more than on the management of pain without drugs?
Oh, yeah. At least in my office mm-hmm. or in my center, our focus is to do pretty much anything we can to get rid of drugs for people mm-hmm. so they don't have to take any medications.
Mm-hmm.
Because medications have a lot of downsides, addiction, bleeding, kidney problem, liver problem, so to speak. So what we do is we focus on trying to identify the structures which are painful by various injections.
Mm-hmm.
And then, for example, if somebody has a facet problem or a joint in the back or the neck problem, we can identify it by injecting it, and then we can come back and actually turn off the nerves that supply those joints by using radio frequency,
mm-hmm.
which is all electrical.
Mm-hmm.
There are other injections we can do with steroids to calm things down, like SI joints and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And if everything else fails, and there is three different types of implants that we do, stimulators, that seem to work very well for various problems.
Mm-hmm. And then how do the neural stimulators work?
Essentially what they do is they send a message up to the brain. Well, keep in mind, the part of the brain that allows the patient to understand where the pain is coming from
mm-hmm.
is basically goes through spinal cord. Spinal cord feeds into an insular cortex, which is a major gateway for pain sensation. From insular cortex, it gets further to the full cortex, and that's where the perception happens.
Mm-hmm.
So a stimulator stimulates equal and opposite stimulation to the insular cortex, thus the pain never makes it anywhere beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basic mechanism.
Mm-hmm. Then what kinds of chronic pain that have generally been considered untreatable can be successfully treated with the neural stimulator?
Well, we've had a lot of success for a number of parts. One is we've had people who have something called failed back surgery syndrome,
mm-hmm.
which is basically somebody has spine surgery and they have persistent pain in the back and legs. So stimulators in the past, regular stimulators, could only work on leg pain, but
mm-hmm.
not very well on back pain.
Mm-hmm.
The new way of putting it in under the skin, which is actually safer, works for back pain. And actually my team pioneered the term hybrid, which
mm-hmm.
is the old stimulator and the new stimulator together. And they seem to work on the back and leg together, which
mm-hmm.
is great.
Mm-hmm.
We have put in stimulators for people who had knee replacement pain that has been unresponsive to anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to work well there. We are about to undertake a study for stimulator for the neck pain, where it's placed under the skin, and it seems to work very well there.
Mm-hmm.
We also applied it for shingles pain.
Really? Mm.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You probably know that shingles pain, when it's persistent, postherpetic neuralgia, is a very devastating disease.
Right. That's why I went and paid almost $200 for my shot.
Exactly. Wise move.
Right.
Yeah, you don't want to get that, that's for sure.
Right. I don't usually take things like that, but I decided that I've seen too many people with it, and I didn't want it.
Exactly. That was wise. That was very wise.
Now, is your neural stimulator anything like the TENS machine?
No, sir. Well, TENS machine, I believe, are quite ineffective. By the time it has any kind of effect,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of muscle recruitment. TENS
mm-hmm.
machine is basically electrodes over the skin, and you need to penetrate below the skin into the area where it needs to go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think patients can tolerate that. Ours are implanted, so it's under the skin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how long do these stay in then? Are they permanent, or is this a short-term thing, or what?
Well, it's done in two phases. First phase, we put trials in. People go home to try it out, like taking a car out for a ride,
mm-hmm.
1 to 2 weeks. and then we put it in permanently. And mm-hmm. then the power source needs to be replaced every 7 to 10 years.
Oh, uh-huh.
So it's like a pacemaker for the mm-hmm. spine is what I usually call it.
Right. That's great that it's every 7 to 10 years. That's not bad at all.
No, technology has gotten much better over the years.
Right. Now, you mentioned knee replacement pain.
Yes.
Are you familiar with prolotherapy?
Very well. The person who started it was in Chicago, in Oak Park. I've trained with him.
Oh, you did?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I interviewed Ross Hauser, who uses
Hauser pro. Bought my teacher's practice.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
oh,
I know.
Oh.
He's in Oak Park. He wrote a book about prolo. It's called Prolo Your Pain Away, is what
mm-hmm.
he wrote.
Mm-hmm. Right. I was impressed. I had not heard of it before, but I figured if it's successful, I certainly would rather have a shot every month or so for 4 to 8 weeks instead
Correct.
Of having knee replacement.
I'm talking about when somebody already had the replacement, when
right.
there's metal in there and still hurts.
Right.
That's about 100,000 people like that in the U.S. alone.
Right, I understood that. I was just bringing up the prolotherapy
right.
because it seemed like a nice alternative to the knee replacement.
So, sometimes it works. Yeah, like anything else, sometimes
right.
everything works.
Right, good. Then, Gene, is there anything else you would like to say about the neurostimulator?
No, I think that hopefully that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great new approach of using it. I've been personally putting in stimulators for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
but this combining the two, old approach and the new approach, seems to work markedly better.
Mm-hmm. Then are there services or books or anything you would like to mention and a way that people can get in touch with you?
Yes, we have a website, advancedpaincenters.org, and that primarily talks about various pain things. If they're interested in various things that we do, I've written a children's book
mm-hmm.
about nutrition, and we have PTSD projects and other projects. Our overall website is EugeneLipovMD.org.
Would you spell that, Gene?
EugeneLipovMD.org.
Mm-hmm. And they can find then the children's book and all on your website?
Yes, I also wrote the menopause book.
Mm-hmm.
That's all there.
Great, good. Well, I appreciate this very much. It's interesting, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you so much.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
In the time we have left, I would like to talk a little about this program. Those of you who have followed the Holistic Health Show from its onset know that we define holistic health as incorporating physical, mental, and spiritual health along with relationships, the environment, and politics, because they all influence our health. You also know that many of the experts interviewed look at one or another part of the whole, but are selected for the show because of their expertise in an area of holistic health. Some of the integration of the various aspects of holistic health are left to you, the listener. You also know that we started with wellness experts that covered such areas as smoking cessation, weight loss, analyzing dreams, using visualization and affirmation, and others. We then had a 5-month series on cancer, followed by a series on arthritis. And now we are talking about back pain. I hope to follow with a series on alternative treatments of seasonal allergies. These are all health concerns that affect all of us. We will eventually talk about relationships, the environment, and politics to round out the concepts of holistic health. If you have topics you would like to hear, please contact me with your ideas. I'm open to your suggestions. I also invite you to my website, www.holistichealthshow.com, that houses all the interviews from the show following the broadcast. I want to share with you that over the past 1 year and 1 week, I have had over 300,000 people come to my website, so I am very pleased And of interest is that usually between 28 and 30% of all those coming to the site are from Russia. So I thank you for your interest. There's another 30% from all over the world, and I thank you also. On my website, you will find my latest book, Healthy Holistic Aging, that forms the framework for this show. There are also some ebooks for sale, and I have completed my first CD on smoking cessation that will be there shortly. Others will follow. In addition, look for updates on the progress of my upcoming book that will cover alternative treatments for lung cancer, that will discuss my interventions for lung cancer when I was given 6 months to live 36 years ago. It will also include the strategies I have used since that time to prevent a recurrence. A chapter on the medical aspects by Dr. Francisco Contreras, a chapter on mind-body interventions by Dr. Bernie Siegel, a chapter on nutrition and lung cancer by Kim Dussel, and a chapter on low-cost interventions, Protocell, by Tanya Harder Pierce will round out the book. I will also discuss background data on lung cancer and the how-tos of the holistic interventions I used during my experience with lung cancer, such as meditation, strengthening faith, special diet, supplements, affirmations, assessing and correcting radon problems, smoking cessation, and others. I thank you for joining me this week. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host, wishing you a great week.